To the memory of Sonny Mehta, Knopf Chairman, Editor-in-Chief, Publisher. Chapter 1. The unhappy little home was out in the country, some 6 miles south of Clanton, on an old county road that went nowhere in particular. The house could not be seen from the road and was accessed by a winding gravel drive that dipped and curved and at night caused approaching headlights to sweep through the front windows and doors as if to warn those waiting inside. The seclusion of the house added to the imminent horror. It was long after midnight on an early Sunday when the headlights finally appeared. They washed through the house and cast ominous silent shadows on the walls, then went away as the car dipped before its final approach. Those inside should have been asleep for hours, but sleep was not possible during these awful nights. On the sofa in the den, Josie took a deep breath, said a quick prayer, and eased to the window to watch the car. Was it weaving and lurching as usual, or was it under control? Was he drunk, as always on these nights, or could he have throttled back on the drinking? She wore a racy negligee to catch his attention and perhaps alter his mood from violence to romance. She had worn it before, and he had once liked it. The car stopped beside the house, and she watched him get out. He staggered and stumbled, and she braced herself for what was to come. She went to the kitchen, where the light was on, and waited. Beside the door and partially hidden in a corner was an aluminum baseball bat that belonged to her son. She had placed it there an hour earlier for protection, just in case he went after her kids. She had prayed for the courage to use it, but still had doubts. He fell against the kitchen door and then rattled the knob as if it were locked. It was not. He finally kicked it open and it slammed into the refrigerator. Stuart was a sloppy, violent drunk. His pale Irish skin turned red, his cheeks were crimson, and his eyes glowed with a whiskey-lit fire that she had seen too many times. At 34, he was graying and balding and tried to cover it up with a bad comb-over, which after a night of bar hopping left long strands of hair hanging below his ears. His face had no cuts or bruises, perhaps a good sign. Perhaps not. He liked to fight in the honky-tonks, and after a rough night he usually licked his wounds and went straight to bed. But if there had been no fights, he often came home looking for a brawl.
"The hell you doing up?"
he snarled as he tried to close the door behind him. As calmly as possible, Josie said,
"Just waiting on you, dear. You okay?"
"I don't need you to wait on me. What time is it? 2 in the morning?
She smiled sweetly, as if all was well. A week earlier, she had decided to go to bed and wait him out there. He came home late and went upstairs and threatened her children.
"About 2, she said softly. "Let's go to bed."
"What are you wearing that thing for? You look like a real slut. Somebody been over here tonight?"
A common accusation these days.
"Of course not," she said. "I'm just ready for bed."
"You're a whore."
"Come on, Stu. I'm sleepy. Let's go to bed."
"Who is he?"
he growled as he fell back against the door.
"Who is who? There's no one. I've been here all night with the kids."
"You're a lying bitch. You know that?"
"I'm not lying, Stu. Let's go to bed. It's late."
"I heard tonight that somebody saw John Albert's truck out here a couple of days ago."
"And who is John Albert?"
"And who is John Albert?" asked the little slut. "You know damn well who John Albert is."
He moved away from the door and took steps toward her, unsteady steps, and he tried to brace himself with the counter. He pointed at her and said,
"You're a little whore, and you got old boyfriends hanging around. I've warned you."
"You're my only boyfriend, Stuart. I've told you that 1,000 times. Why can't you believe?"